ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय मर्त्यो मृत्युज्वाल पिता फलायन् लोकान् सर्वान् निर्भयम् नाद्य गच्छत् त्वत्पादबीजम् प्रप्ययत्रिच्छदा सुस्तासेते मृत्युरस्मारपैति मर्त्यो मृत्युव्यालपिता फलायन्
No one in this material world has become free from the four principles, birth, death, old age, and disease, even by fleeing to various planets. But now that you have appeared, my Lord, death is fleeing in fear of you, and the living entities, having obtained shelter at your lotus feet by your mercy, are sleeping in full mental peace.
Purport by His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada.
There are different categories of living entities, but everyone is afraid of death. The highest aim of the karmis is to be promoted to the higher heavenly planets, where the duration of life is very long. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Sahasra Yuga Paryantam Aharayad Brahmano Vidhu, 1 day of Brahma equals 1,000 yugas, and each yuga consists of 4,300,000 years. Similarly, Brahma has a night of 1,000 times 4,300,000 years. In this way, we may calculate Brahma's month and year. But even Brahma, who lives for millions and millions of years, Viparadakala, also must die. According to the Vedic Shastra, the inhabitants of the higher planetary systems live for 10,000 years. And just as Brahma's day is calculated to equal 4,300,000,000 of our years, 1 day in the higher planetary systems equals 6 of our months. Karmis, therefore, try for promotion to the higher planetary systems, but this cannot free them from death. In this material world, everyone from Brahma to the insignificant ant must die. Therefore, this world is called Martya Loka. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Punar Avartanojana, as long as one is within this material world, either on Brahma Loka or on any other Loka, within this universe, one must undergo the Kala Chakra of one life after another. Bhutva bhutva praliyate. But if one returns to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, yad gatva na nivartante, one need not re-enter the limits of time. Therefore, devotees who have taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord can sleep very peacefully with this assurance from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Tyaktva Deham Punarjanma Naiti, after giving up the present body, a devotee who has understood Krishna as he is need not return to this material world. The constitutional position for the living entity is eternity. Nahanyate hanyamane sarire nitya shashvatoyam. Every living entity is eternal. But because of having fallen into this material world, one wanders within the universe, continually changing from one body to another. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jiva Guru Krishna Prasade Bhai Bhakti Latha Bija. Everyone is wandering up and down within this universe. But one who is sufficiently fortunate comes in contact with Krishna consciousness by the mercy of the spiritual master and takes to the path of devotional service. Then one is assured of eternal life with no fear of death. When Krishna appears, everyone is freed from fear of death. Yet Devaki felt, we are still afraid of Kamsa, although you have appeared as our son. She was more or less bewildered as to why this should be so, and she appealed to the Lord to free her and Vasudev from this fear. In this connection, it may be noted that the moon is one of the heavenly planets. From the Vedic literature, we understand that one who goes to the moon receives a life with duration of 10,000 years in which to enjoy the fruits of pious activities. If our so-called scientists are going to the moon, why should they come back here? We must conclude without a doubt that they never gone to the moon. To go to the moon, one must have qualification of pious activities. Then one may go there and live. If one has gone to the moon, why should he return to this planet where life is a very short duration? It's very interesting that Govinda Prabhu specifically chose this verse, where when we remember Krishna, we're free of fear of death. The day after he and the brahmacharis closed the temple in fear of the swine flu. Any purport you'd like to offer? Today, by the causeless mercy of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, we are gathered together to celebrate Krishna's appearance within this world, Janmashtami. We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam the prayers of Devaki to Lord Krishna in the prison cell in Mathura. As Krishna has appeared before her, Krishna especially appears within this material existence for the purpose of attracting our hearts back to our original natural essence, which is to be eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss.
And what is that bliss? The highest perfection of bliss is to be attracted by the unlimited opulences of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In every religion, it is stated that God is great. Srimad Bhagavatam explains quite thoroughly how God is great. Srila Prabhupada begins his Krishna book by explaining, according to Parasara Muni, the father of Vyasadeva, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Aishwaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashashashriya. The Supreme Lord has six opulences in full. And this is how we can actually evaluate who is God. Those opulences are wealth, knowledge, strength, fame, beauty, and renunciation. If anyone within this material world has even a single one of these opulences to a slight degree more than others, it is very attractive. Some people are attracted to wealth or fame or beauty or knowledge or strength or renunciation. We read about such people. We see such people. But in this world, whoever may have these opulences, it is always limited and temporary. But that person who has all of these opulences to an unlimited degree, forever, that is God. The cause of all causes. Whatever opulence we have is only because we are a part of the supreme origin of all opulences. Krishna is all attractive, and anything we see in anything or anyone that is attractive, it's only because of its connection to Krishna. Like a little spark from the sun. The spark of the sun may seem very brilliant only because it's a part. But Krishna is the origin and the complete whole of everything. Srila Prabhupada explains people are very fond of hearing about attractive people, reading books about attractive people, seeing movies about attractive people. But they can never be satisfied. Because whether we have attraction or whether we are attracted in this world can never fulfill the needs of the soul. Because the soul by nature is eternal, and therefore it's looking for an attraction that's eternal. And because the soul is of a spiritual nature, it is looking for an attraction that is unlimited. And the reason why? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made it very simple. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Satya Kabunoi. Because inherently, our nature is to love God. And that love is to be completely attracted by Krishna. Krishna means the all-attractive. And the dynamics of that love is when we love Krishna's all attractive qualities, Krishna becomes attracted to the love that we possess. And in this way, there is an interconnected relationship between the soul and God. Krishna being the all-attractive one, he conquers the heart of anyone who just reposes their propensity for pleasure in him. But then, in reciprocation, Krishna is conquered by the love of that devotee. Parikshit Maharaj, he was cursed to die in 7 days. He left everything of his kingdom and went to the bank of the Ganges. And there, by the grace of all the great sages, he was given the darshan of Shukadev Goswami. Although Shukadev Goswami was hardly 16 years old, and there were scholars, rishis, and self-realized souls who were timeless gathered there, people who were traversing the earth since the time of Ram and way before. They were all there, self-realized, enlightened beings. But they all selected Shukadev Goswami to be the speaker, to represent all of them. Why? Because he had such deep realization. He was madly in love with Krishna. Parikshit Maharaj began by asking the fundamental questions that are so vital for every human being's life within this world. What is the supreme occupation for all humanity? What is the essence of all religion and all scriptures? And what is the duty of a person who is about to die? Srila Prabhupada explains in this purport that death is imminent. There are different ways of explaining the universe, but a common way that is described in the Vedas is there are three planetary systems. The upper planets are Swargaloka, places of heavenly pleasures. The lower places are the Patala Lokas, or the hellish planets, where there is great suffering. And the middle planets are called Martya Loka. Basically means place of death. Because in the middle planetary system, it is the best possibility for self-realization. And in order for self-realization to be there, we must be conscious of the reality of death. Yes? Actually, in the higher planets, you could live, Prabhupada is explaining, average lifespans 10,000 years in the Swargaloka area. Just think of that, 10,000 years. That's practically double the span of time that modern historians even give to human history. I mean, besides the scriptures, what history do we have of humanity before 5,000 years ago? Very scanty. Maybe some, you know, archaeological findings, a few little things in the pyramids in Egypt or something like that, by the empiric historians. So 10,000 years is over double what we know of human history as far as historians go in the mundane perspective. And that's just average life for anyone. And when you go up to the higher planets above Swargaloka, it's much more. Brahmaloka, it's not that Brahma lives there alone. It's a whole civilization. Massive population. And Brahma lives 311 trillion years. Hare Krishna. But from Krishna's perspective, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Punaravartan Arjuna Mamupetya Tukonteya Punarjanma Nivijyate. 311 trillion years is really not much different than 20 years. Because from the perspective of eternity, it all flashes by. It's all so temporary. And when death comes, which is inevitable, it's not going to really feel like it's much different. Prabhupada is explaining between Brahma and an ant, there's not much difference. An ant lives, we can do a study how long an ant lives, maybe a couple weeks by our calculation. It goes through all the same phases of life that we do. So in the upper planets, life is very, very long. And in the lower planets, life is really long. Because according to your sinful activities, you may have to be in a body and go through the reactions of your deeds for a long, long time. But these middle planets, light's not very long. And why is it like that? Because if we are aware of the inevitability and the vulnerability that we have, it gives us more impetus to fulfill the real purpose of the middle planetary systems, to seek God, to strive for self-realization. Shukadeva Goswami explained, one moment is better than a whole long life, one moment of full consciousness. We've sometimes referred to the oldest tree in the world, the Norwegian spruce tree in Sweden, which is 9,200 years old. Now, that's a long life. But what has that tree accomplished? Internally. What has it done for the world? Something. But many of the greatest people who ever lived didn't live very long. But they attained realization, direct experience of the eternal reality within themselves. And they've shared that with the world. That is the greatest thing. So Parikshit Maharaj had 7 days to live. He could have counteracted the curse, but he willingly did not. He took it as a blessing, as an opportunity to fully absorb himself in the most important consideration of human life, to remember Krishna through Krishna Katha, through hearing about Krishna. Parikshit Maharaj asked questions which were for the welfare of all humanity. And Sukadeva Goswami was so happy. He congratulated Parikshit Maharaj for asking such good questions.
Why?
Because the answers to these questions are for the ultimate benefit for everyone. Therefore, they are all auspicious. And he spoke the first 9 cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam. And then when the 10th canto was beginning, Parikshit Maharaj asked questions that really stimulated Shukadeva Goswami to speak the ultimate conclusions of the Bhagavatam. He asked about Krishna. And Krishna makes his pastimes so interesting that we want to know. Parikshit Maharaj asked, why was this child, Balaram, transferred from the womb of Devaki to the wood of Rohini? That's quite extraordinary. Because we hear these things so much, and because we're not so alert, we just become dull. We think, yes, yes, so what? I know, I already know that. But actually, it's extraordinary. A child being transferred from one person, one lady's room to another lady's room. It wasn't done through medical surgery because one woman was barren and the other. No, why? How was this done and why? And another question. Why, after all this hardship that Vasudeva and Devaki endured, why when Krishna was born, finally, on that very same night, was he brought to Gokul to live in the house of Nanda and Yashoda, to be brought up somewhere else? And when Krishna was in Gokul, I want to know, what did he do? What were his activities? What pastimes did he perform? Please tell me these. And why did he move from Vrindavan to Mathura, or back to Mathura and then to Dwarka? He was asking so many questions. Yeah, why Krishna, why would he want to kill his own uncle, Kamsa? Parikshit Maharaj was the son of Abhimanyu and Uttara. He was the grandson of Arjuna. And therefore, he had a very, very special connection to Krishna through his relatives. After all, Prabhupada explains, in the battle of Kurukshetra, Arjuna was small compared to some of those other warriors in the Kuru dynasty like Bhishma and Drona. He compared the battlefield of Kurukshetra to a vast ocean, and the warriors of the Kurus to be like Timangila fish. Prabhupada says Timangila fish are so powerful that they can swallow up a whale. Just like you or me eat a piece of Sandesh. Timangilifit eat whales. I guess they're very sweet. How is it possible that Arjuna, it was only possible because of Krishna, because he took shelter of Krishna. And Parikshit Maharaj himself, after the battle was finished, Aswatthama sent that Brahmastra into the womb of Uttara to kill Parikshit Maharaj, and Uttara took shelter of Krishna at that time to save her child, and Krishna in reciprocation appeared within the womb and saved Parikshit's life. And Parikshit saw it with his own eyes as a little embryo. He was given that vision. So he had great faith in Krishna. He was so eager to hear about Krishna. In the beginning of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Parikshit Maharaj reveals his enthusiasm to hear Krishna Katha. Previously, when he was out in the jungles, he got thirsty. And because of that thirst, he got covered over and disrespected Samik Rishi, because Samik Rishi was in Samadhi and didn't give him water in his hermitage. And he had just not drinking water for a few hours. Now it has been days, many days. Parikshit Maharaj did not take a drop of water or a morsel of food, and he didn't even sleep. Today's Janmashtami. Some of you who are able to do so will do Nirjal fast. No food, no water till midnight. Now it's only 10 o'clock in the morning. But some of you may be feeling really thirsty now, just thinking about another 14 hours. Yes, 14 more hours. So just thinking about how much more time you may be feeling thirsty. But Parikshit Maharaj tells to Sukadeva Goswami, even though so many days I'm not feeling the slightest inconvenience. Why? Because the nectarine Ganges of Krishna Katha is flowing from your mouth. Completely satisfying and fulfilling all my desires. Param drishva nivartate. When one develops that higher taste of hearing about Krishna, it really satisfies all our desires. And in order to attain that higher taste, we must have an eagerness, an enthusiasm to want to hear. According to our eagerness, Krishna Katha enters deep into our heart and satisfies our soul. Krishna tells, as you approach me, I reciprocate and reveal myself accordingly. According to our enthusiasm, according to our lobha, our transcendental greed, to want to hear, to want to chant, to want to serve, Krishna manifests himself. Factually, when we read Srimad Bhagavatam, we are hearing the exact same thing as Sukadeva, as Parikshit Maharaj heard. Now, when somebody sits and just recites the Srimad Bhagavatam, you may start getting uneasy. You might start getting hungry and thirsty after a couple days. You might start losing your attention. It's the same vibration. Parikshit Maharaj had the adhikar, the qualification of that eagerness, of that sense of urgency. Therefore, Krishna Katha was so sweet for him. Shukadeva Goswami, thanking Parikshit Maharaj for his enthusiasm, he explains that three types of people benefit when there's Krishna Katha. The person that is inquiring about Krishna, the person that is speaking about Krishna, and everyone else that happens to hear it. So, Parikshit Maharaj was the qualified inquirer, because from his heart of heart, he deeply felt the urgency, the need, the greed to hear about Krishna. He was inquiring with all submissiveness to his Gurudev. And therefore he's the perfect inquirer. And Sukadeva Goswami was the perfect speaker, because he had heard in parampara, in the disciplic succession, from his father, and he was repeating those words with realization and compassion. And the third category is all of us, the people hearing. There were so many great sages in the bank of the Ganges listening . And actually, we are none different than them. We're hearing the same message. According to our eagerness, according to our urgency, we will get the same benefit as Parikshit Maharaj. That should be understood. But because Parikshit Maharaj understood that he was about to die, he really focused. And therefore, in this beautiful purport of Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada is explaining that we all should be aware of that inevitability. In fact, Prabhupada warned us not to make us simply fearful and pessimistic, but to make us enthusiastic. Prabhupada didn't want us to simply be afraid. He wanted us to be sincere. He told us that Parikshit Maharaj knew he had 7 days. And by the time of the sixth canto, he knew he had a couple more days to live. But there is not a single person in this entire planet Earth that knows for sure that they even have 1 day or even 1 hour. There simply is no guarantee. And there's nothing you can do to make that for certain. What is for certain is padam padam yadvi padam natesham, that there is danger at every step. Whether we're billionaires or millionaires, or whether we're upper class or upper middle class or middle class, or lower middle class, or whether we're in poverty, or whether we're PhDs or uneducated, or whether we're politicians or farmers, or men or women, whatever race, whatever arrangements we can possibly make, still, life is beyond our control. We just don't know. So to be aware of that is not to cause us to be paranoid and fearful. It's to make us serious. In one sense, it makes us happy. Because when we know about the inevitable dangers of this material world, it impels us to take shelter of Krishna very seriously. And in taking shelter of Krishna very seriously, there's real fulfillment, there's real happiness, there's real hope. There's real life. It's wonderful. Parikshit Maharaj was in ecstasy. Because he was filled with the all-attractive remembrance of the Lord. Sukadeva Goswami, he explained how at one time there was great trouble on this earth because powerful asuras, arrogant, greedy, violent beings were conquering all directions and exploiting and terrorizing the common people. It was so bad that Mother Earth took the form of a cow and went to Lord Brahma. Because Mother Earth is the mother of everyone on the earth. And she saw how people were suffering so much. It's the history of this world that people who are violent, arrogant, and greedy manipulate and terrorize the common people. She went to Lord Brahma. And even the devatas, the demigods, they were being terrorized. Even they didn't know what to do. So Lord Brahma took them to Svetadvip. And there is an ocean of milk. Brahma and the devatas, they offered prayers, specifically Purusha Shukta, which invites the Lord to come to this world. But there was no response. So Lord Brahma sat alone. Well, he was with all others, but he sat in his own meditation on the Lord. And through Brahma's heart, Kshirodakshayi Vishnu spoke and told him the message that he was coming to the world. And he wanted the devatas with their wives to take birth in the Yadu dynasty to assist him in his divine mission. It is very interesting how when the Lord appears in the world, it is generally in very urgent circumstances where his devotees are really crying out for help. We don't see very often that the Lord just comes on a nice sunny day when everything's nice. The moment he appears, he may make it like that. But what leads to his appearance is usually very difficult times. Let us just look at the principal avatars. Matsya avatar. It wasn't just that the king, Satyavrat, was just nice day. There was inundation. Such a massive rainstorm that the entire world was flooded. And except for the living beings that were on Satyavrata's boat, everything was finished. And there was no land for him. There was just this boat floating around in this massive, unlimited ocean of devastation. And then Matsya appears as the divine Lord in the form of a fish, golden fish. And he spoke the Vedas. Otherwise, they would have been lost. Really, a condition of great emergency. And Varaha Dev, or let's, the next is Kurma. Yes, the devatas and the asuras were churning the ocean, and the entire mountain started sinking. It was really a critical situation, because the devatas had lost practically everything. They made a truce with the asuras for the purpose of this churning. And if the churning was not going to happen, then the devatas would have nothing. They would be forlorn and forsaken. So the Lord appeared as Kurma Rupa at a time when everybody was screaming and praying and crying out for help. Serious emergency. Then the earth was in the bottom of the Garbhodak ocean, and Hiranyaksha was terrorizing the universe, and Varahadev came in that situation when everything was hopeless. He lifted the earth with his tusks and delivered Hiranyaksha. And Narasimhadev, he didn't come when it was just good times. He came when Hiranyakashipu was terrorizing the entire universe, and he was about to kill the most exalted of all devotees, Prahlad. He appeared from the pillar. And then Aditi, when she saw that her children lost everything, they were hiding in exile. She was so distressed that she prayed to the Lord and did great tapasya, and Vamanadeva appeared. And Parasaram, demoniac kings were trampling and killing everything and destroying everything and ruining all culture, and Parasaram came to put things right at a time of great emergency. And Ramchandra, Ravana, was terrorizing the universe. The demigods were praying for help. Dasarath wanted a son so bad, but he had no sons. After year after year after year, none of his wives would get pregnant. And he considered his entire kingdom to be like a dreary void. He performed tapasya and yajnas. And in that situation, Rama appears. And Sita, there was great drought in Mithila. It was an emergency. Janak Maharaj, along with the Brahmins, were plowing the fields to do a yajna. And she came out from the earth. As far as Kalki, he's to come, but it's not very good times when he appears. It's times of utter desperation. And Lord Buddha, when the whole poor animals were being slaughtered everywhere, the Vedas were being exploited and manipulated for arrogant people's own purposes. So it's very interesting. The Lord usually comes in the most difficult times. And here we find Krishna. It's not an exception. Why? In each of these pastimes, we find the devotees are really crying out urgently from their hearts for the Lord's shelter, and the Lord appears. And actually, the Lord is in all of our hearts. And when we are eager to hear about him, like Parikshit, when we really call out his name taking shelter, like Prahlad, then Krishna appears within our hearts. Krishna consciousness is not about suffering. Krishna consciousness is about real happiness. But that real happiness can only be when we make that serious connection with Krishna through taking shelter of Krishna. Goswami Sukadev tells about the marriage of Devaki and Vasudev. Vasudev, the son of Surasena, was to take Devaki home to his own residence. And according to the custom, because the bride is leaving her father and mother's home, usually her friends go with her, and her brother takes her to give her some company and pacify her heart. So Kamsa, out of affection, took the reins of the chariot to bring Devaki home to Vasudev's house. It was the night time. But as they were driving the chariot, a tumultuous voice spoke from the sky. Kamsa, you are a fool. You are taking so nice care to drive your sister home. You do not know that the eighth child of your sister is going to be the cause of your death. Then the voice became quiet. Kamsa was so much agitated with fear that he grabbed Devaki's hair with one hand, then drew his sword. He was about to kill her. Vasudev, very much in the alert to save his newly wedded wife, he pleaded with Kamsa, "Why are you so afraid of death? Death is inevitable. Why should be afraid of something that's going to happen no matter what? And why should you commit such unscrupulous, sinful activities due to that fear? Everyone knows that when you're born, the notice of death is given. And whoever you are, you cannot avoid it. When you're 25 years old, what does that mean? You're 25 years closer to death. But the soul is eternal. It's an illusion to think that you are this body. So why should anyone commit sinful activities simply on the basis of this dream? According to your mentality at the time of death and according to the actions you perform, you have to go to another body. Just like a traveler, one foot steps in front of the other, and then the back foot has to leave the ground in order to take the next step. Or like a plant worm is going from one leaf or twig to the next. So similarly, the soul is going from one body to another body to another body. Birth, old age, disease, and death are inevitable. So why should we fear the inevitable? It's like the moon. The moon shines on water. And when there's waves in the water, it appears that the moon is moving. Actually, the moon is not moving. The moon is stationary in the sky. It's the reflection that is moving. So similarly, the soul is forever. But when the soul identifies with this reflection of its existence within this material world due to the uncontrolled mind and senses, then we become agitated, we become disturbed. So he was giving very nice basic philosophy to Kamsa, that for the body, death is certain, so there's no reason to be afraid. And for the soul, there is no death, there is no birth. We are eternal, so there's nothing to fear. So why do you want to commit these abominable activities to your own sister? Fear is only due to envy. Envy of God. Envy of other living beings. But Kamsa could not hear because he was so attached to his senses. Because he was such a selfish person. Even the best philosophy given by self-realized souls can only be digested when we have some humility and we have some sense of need to hear it. So in that situation, Vasudev was thinking that I somehow or other have to save my sister. Because if she dies now, there's no question of other children being born. But if I save her, then I could think about how to save the children later on. So he promised Kamsa that you have no fear of Devaki. That voice said her eighth son will kill you. I will give you every son that is born. You have my word, my promise. Kamsa understood that Vasudeva's word was for certain. He was a man of integrity. He released him. Vasudeva and Devaki had a son, little baby Kirtiman. And Vasudev, true to his word, actually went to Kamsa's place and gave the baby. Kamsa was amazed. Such honesty. Just for the sake of his word, just for the sake of truth, he's willing to sacrifice his firstborn and only son? Now, most of us are willing to twist the truth for insignificant reasons, yes? Just to get ahead in line, we'll say something. For little things, we'll tell a lie. But this was the integrity of Vasudev. His word of honor was more valuable than his only son. Incredible. Kamsa was really impressed. He congratulated Vasudev. Such honesty you have. Such a great person you are. But actually, it's the eighth child that I'm concerned with. So you can take your child back. So Vasudev started returning home with the little baby. But he understood that Kamsa could change his mind at any moment. Because a person who is too much attached to his own selfish interests cannot be trusted. At that time, Narada, the great sage, one of the acharyas of our sampradaya, visited Kamsa. Narada Muni was getting worried that Kamsa was becoming too nice. If Kamsa becomes too nice, then it's going to prolong Krishna's appearance in this world. And Narada understood that everything becomes auspicious when it's connected to Krishna. Narada understood things much, much deeper than we do. So he told Kamsa, you know, I was traveling around and I heard a meeting of the demigods. And Vishnu is your enemy. He told your bitter enemies, the demigods, all to take birth in the Yadu dynasty and the Bhoja and Andaka dynasties. And they're all taking birth for the purpose of destroying you. And this child, Vishnu, could be born at any time from Vasudeva and Devaki. Don't take any chances. Because in your previous birth, you were Kalanemi and Vishnu killed you. And now he's coming back to kill you again. And after giving him this information, Narada Muni, chanting Jai Shri Radharaman, and left. Kamsa was so much incited by Narada Muni that all the demigods are taking birth all over the place. And Vishnu could be born at any time. So out of fear and agitation, first thing he did is his own father, Ugrasena, king of the Bhoja dynasty, he put him in prison and took the throne. Then Surasena, Vasudeva's father, conquered him and took his prison. I mean, took his kingdom. He became the Yadus, the Andakas, the Bhojas. He became the king of all of these different provinces. And put Vasudeva and Devaki in chains in his prison. Then to fortify his powers, he made allies with other asuras from all different directions. And the Garga Samhita explains how he made allies. He would go to those places. If they didn't become his allies, he would fight with them until they were on the verge of death, and then they would vow to be his ally. He was very powerful. Each one of Kamsa's arms had the power of 10,000 elephants. And in Dwapar Yuga, the elephants were much bigger and powerful than in Kali Yuga. Can you imagine such power? But yet, however powerful, he was living in fear. So in this way, he became the king. And all good people were terrorized.
And every year, Vasudeva and Devaki would have a child. And as soon as that child was born, Kamsa would take it and slaughter it. Right in the presence of the child's mother and father. Personally, he beat the little infant against the rock until it was just a bloody mess, dead. Now, the obvious question, why did Vasudeva and Devaki keep having children? It's not that they couldn't control their senses and they were unwanted children. They were completely self-realized souls. Why would anyone, after the and they did it every year. That means soon after one child was born, they would start the process of another one. And traumatic. Can you imagine if you had a baby and you saw your own brother right in front of your eyes beat it to death against a rock? That would be trauma for the rest of your life. Most people would have to go to psychiatrists and psychologists and all kinds of things just to live after seeing such a thing. Well, what did they do? They went through the process of having another child right after. And it's not they could hide it. They were in Kamsa's prison. And there was 24-hour guards just watching for the next child to be born. 6 consecutive children. The reason? Because they understood. It was their service to Krishna. Krishna was going to be their 8th child, so whatever they had to go through to facilitate Krishna coming as their 8th child, they were willing to do so. Such surrender. It's inconceivable and unbelievable, the devotion of Vasudeva and Devaki under such circumstances. We have a hard time giving up eating onions for Krishna's service. Or we have a hard time, waking up early for Krishna's service. Or we have a hard time, chanting our rounds for Krishna's service. We think, oh, how could I do this? But Vasudeva and Devaki, what they were willing to do for Krishna's service. Srila Prabhupada was in that spirit. He was willing to get on that Jaladuta. Friday, August 13th, yes? That was yesterday? Huh? Yesterday is the anniversary day when Prabhupada boarded the Jaladuta. And it started. Jaladuta's just now in the eternal Leela of Prabhupada. It's just leaving Calcutta as we're sitting here. And a few days later, heart attacks, separation from Vrindavan. All for the sake of Krishna's mission. Such great personalities. What Jesus underwent for the sake of Krishna's mission. Moses living in the wilderness for a whole generation
for God's mission. Haridas Thakur, what he went through, getting beat through 22 marketplaces, being harassed, all just to be faithful to God's mission. Srivas Thakur, how he was condemned and blasphemed and threatened in so many ways, and he endured it all for God's mission. Just to help Krishna to deliver others. So the 6 children were killed. And then Vasudev and Devaki had another. And it is explained that Balaram himself appeared in the womb of Devaki. The first expansion of Krishna in the spiritual world, just to prepare for Krishna's arrival. Now the acharyas tell us who these 6 children represented. That historically, Marichi, great demigod sage, he had 6 children. And at one time, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is telling this story also in Chaitanya Bhagavat. At one time, they laughed at Brahma in a cynical way because he was chasing his own daughter to enjoy her. Now that's... They couldn't understand why he's doing this. But because Brahma is such an exalted Vaishnav, it was considered to be an aparad. And because of that aparad, they had to take birth as demons. So one of their births, they were the sons of Kalanemi, grandson of Hiranyakashipu. And they went to perform tapasya to get supernatural powers. And Hiranyakashipu found out, "You are doing tapasya without asking me?" He was outraged. Now Hiranyakashipu had already conquered all directions. But when you have this material ego, it can never be satisfied. Although he had conquered the demigods, he couldn't tolerate his own grandchildren doing something without his permission. He was so agitated because of that he cursed them. That in your next birth, you're going to die at the hands of your own father, Kalanemi, who will become Kamsa. So these 6, actually they wanted to die soon so that they could go back to, they didn't want to be demons anymore. They wanted to go back to their demigod, rishi position. So actually Narada Muni, he was doing what those spirit souls really wanted. He was fulfilling their desire. And he's Trikalagya. He understood past, present, and future. He understood what was going to happen. A little later in the story we read where Devaki in Dwarka asks Krishna for the benediction. Bring my sons back. Because you brought the dead children of Sandipani Muni back, so can you bring my sons back too? It was her motherly nature. And Krishna went and brought the sons back. The 6 children that were killed by Kamsa. And even though it was so many years later, Devaki had such motherly affection for these six children that she developed milk, motherly milk, and fed each of them. And because she had given her milk to Krishna. Just before Krishna went to Gokul, she fed him. So her milk was Mahaprasad. And after these six children drank the Mahaprasad of Krishna, they became pure devotees. They became delivered forever. They attained the ultimate perfection of life. So the wisdom of great sages has to be understood with faith. Narada Muni cursed Nala Kuvera and Manigriva to be trees for 100 celestial years. That's a long time. One 6 months of our time is 1 day for a demigod. So what's 100 celestial years? That's how long they stood there as trees. So one may think, why Narada Muni got so angry? Great personalities are not supposed to get angry. They're supposed to bless, they're not supposed to curse. But Narada blessed in the form of a curse. 100 celestial years to get to see Krishna's pastimes and to get Krishna's personal darshan, attain the ultimate perfection of life. It was wonderful. So similarly, when Narada Muni talked to Kamsa, he knew he was going to kill all Devaki's son, but he understood that by doing so, these children are going to get pure devotional service. They're going to attain the ultimate perfection of life. So it's good for everyone. And most of all, Krishna is going to come to appear, to attract all people for all time to come by performing his Vrindavan Leela. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur tells that the symbolic message of this Leela is that the six children of Devaki represent the six anarthas. Kama, krodha, lobha, lust, envy, anger, greed, arrogance, and illusion. And Devaki represents bhakti. Kamsa represents fear of material existence. When we have a healthy fear of material existence, we take shelter of Krishna. We're very careful about what we do in life. And by taking shelter of Krishna in that serious, urgent state, we remove, we kill the lust, envy, anger, pride, and greed from the heart. Chaito Dharapana Marajanam Bhava Mahadavagni Nirvapanam. These anarthas are like dust in the mirror of the mind. But when we feel a sense of real urgency due to the conditions of material existence, then we chant the holy name not just as a ritual, not just as a regulation. We chant the holy names because we need the shelter of the holy names. Draupadi, she chanted Krishna's name so many times. But when she was being stripped, then Krishna manifested himself because she chanted from her heart. Gajendra, when he chanted the holy names of the Lord, it was with the sense of the greatest urgency. He was surrendering himself to the Lord. These are the model roles in which we should learn how to chant the holy names. This is the model roles of how we should learn how to be eager to hear about Krishna. We need shelter. So when a devotee sees the nature of material existence, that devotee chants the holy names, hears about Krishna and prays to Krishna so sincerely, in such a mood of seeking shelter, that the six anarthas are removed. They are destroyed. And then the original guru, Sri Balaramji, arranges everything for Krishna's appearance. And then Krishna manifests himself within the heart. When Balaramji was in the womb of Devaki, Krishna called for his Yogamaya potency. Parashya Shaktir Vipataiva Shruyate. Krishna has unlimited potencies. Yogamaya is his spiritual power. The whole of Vrindavan is under the jurisdiction of Yogamaya. He told Yogamaya, transfer Ananta, Balaramji, who is now in the womb of Devaki, to his original mother, Rohini, who is now under the care of Nanda Maharaj in Gokul. And because you make that transfer, his name will become Shankarshan. And then you take birth as the daughter of Yashoda, and I will take birth in the womb of Devaki. The Haribamsa tells the story that Rohini was made pregnant by Vasudev, and then she was sent. She was sent to Gokul to be under the care of Nanda Maharaj. Vasudev had many wives. So in her pregnancy, one night at midnight, Rohini had a dream that she had a miscarriage. Very startling. And she woke up soon after and discovered that it was true. She did have a miscarriage. Then Yogamaya spoke to Rohini and explained how I have taken the child of Devaki and transferred him now into your womb. In the spiritual world of Goloka, Rohini is the eternal mother of Balaram. So by the arrangement of Yogamaya, he was bringing Balaramji to his original mother. And then Krishna entered into the womb of Devaki. And when he did, Devaki became so effulgent and so beautiful. Kamsa saw this and understood, the child who is to kill me has now come into Devaki. He was absolutely certain, this is the child. Vishnu has come. And he increased the guards around Devaki to make sure that as soon as that child was born, it would be killed. Srila Prabhupada explains, quoting from the Srimad Bhagavatam, that the birth was completely transcendental. First, Krishna appeared within the mind and heart of Vasudeva. And then there was no physical interaction. From the heart of Vasudeva, the child was transferred into the heart of Devaki. And even the demigods from all directions were coming to offer prayers to Krishna in the womb of Devaki, in the prison cell of Kamsa. Imagine, that prison cell became the spiritual world. Spiritual world is not subjected to material considerations. Wherever Krishna is, that is Vaikuntha. That is Goloka. Tatra tishtami narada yatra gayanti mad bhakta. Krishna tells Narada Muni, wherever my devotees are chanting my holy names, I am there. Wherever there is Krishna, there is all auspiciousness. How Krishna wants to make his point so clear. The demigods are leaving the most beautiful, magnificent heavenly planets to come on pilgrimage to a prison. Yes? This is amazing. Indra's Swargaloka, Brahma, Brahmaloka, Shiva, Shivaloka. These are the most magnificent heavenly places. And they're leaving those places to come on pilgrimage to a prison dungeon to do puja and prayer there. Why? Because Krishna was there. Therefore, that prison house, of that jail cell of Kamsa was the holiest of all holy places on the planet, in the universe, because of Krishna's presence. Krishna makes everything auspicious. And it was on this day Soma, the eighth day of the waning moon, he appeared as a full moon on this day just to celebrate Krishna's arrival. Everything became completely auspicious. And Krishna, in his transcendental way, just proved to the world that he is the absolute truth, the supreme personality of Godhead without doubt. From inside the heart of Devaki, he manifested outside in the darkness of the prison cell, emanating great light in his form of Vishnu. He was born with a beautiful blue complexion, lotus-like eyes, long, long black hair. Most babies are born naked. He had golden lower cloth, golden chadar, beautiful crown, the Kostuba jewel on his chest. He was holding the conch shell and the disc and the lotus flower and the club. Vasudev, seeing this form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead before him, offered prayers, acknowledging that he was the God of all gods. He was the creator, maintainer, and annihilator of all universes. He was the cause of all causes. And he appears within this world by his own sweet will, just to rescue and deliver the conditioned souls. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chaduskritam. To annihilate the miscreants, to protect the devotees and reestablish the principles of religion. Vasudeva, in his heart of hearts, had nothing. He was in jail. But he was so happy that in his mind he was giving millions of cows in charity to Brahmins. At that time, Devaki offered her prayers. After acknowledging his supremacy, she presented her own motherly affection. She knew he was God, but still, she was his mother. And she had already gone through seeing six of her children slaughtered. And the other child, it appeared she had a miscarriage. She loved Krishna. She had pure love for him. If Kamsa knows that you are Vishnu, he will certainly cause harm to you. So please make yourself invisible. Hide yourself from Kamsa. Take the form of an ordinary little child so that you could be hidden. So on the prayer of Devaki, Krishna fulfilled her desire. Lord Vishnu spoke, and he said to Vasudev, bring me across the Yamuna to Gokul and put me on the bed of Yashoda. And in exchange, bring back her daughter. And then he told Devaki and Vasudev about their true identities. He said, long ago, Vasudev, you were Sutapa, and Devaki was Prishni. And you performed tapasya for 12,000 years, eating only the leaves that fell from trees. You did all that tapasya for the purpose of having me as your son. And I appeared. I gave you you received the benediction that I would be born to you three times. I appeared to you in that birth as Prishnigarbha. And then in the next birth, the two of you were Aditi and Kashyapa, and I came as Upendra. And now I have appeared to you as Krishna. And you will not have to take birth again in this material world. You will go back to Godhead. Then Krishna became a beautiful little baby. Devaki nursed him. Suddenly, by the mystical arrangement of the Lord, all the guards guarding the prison cell fell into deep sleep. The doors opened, and all the gates opened. And suddenly, Vasudev felt the chains that were keeping him bound They just opened up and released him. In his arms, he took the little baby Gopal, torrential rains began to fall. But Anantashesha appeared just behind Vasudev to form an umbrella so that not a single drop of water would inconvenience little Gopal. When he arrived at Yamuna, Yamuna was flooding. Terrible waves and whirlpools. How possibly can he bring the child across? But the scriptures tell, just like the ocean gave way to Ramchandra to get to Sri Lanka, similarly, Yamuna Devi made a pathway, a very peaceful pathway for Vasudev to cross. Now the Acharyas quote from the Padma Purana, other great scriptures, and their own revelations. Jiva Goswami describes in great detail, Gopal Champu, how Krishna simultaneously appeared as the son of Devaki and Yashoda. Yashoda Mai actually had twins. The original Krishna was born to Yashoda. And the little baby that Vasudev had was an expansion, a Vishnu expansion of Krishna. And he merged into the body of Yashoda's Krishna. So after crossing over, he came to Yashoda's bed. She was sleeping, because by the Yogamaya potency, she didn't even know what she gave birth to. She just gave birth and fell asleep. And the original Krishna, who never leaves Vrindavan, was in Yashoda's side. And Vasudev took Yogamaya back to Mathura. When he came back into the prison cell, all the doors closed, the shackles locked around his body, and little Yogamaya cried. Woke up everybody. Immediately the guards ran to Kamsa. The child is born. This was at midnight, a little after midnight. Krishna was born at midnight. This is a little later. Kamsa didn't waste any time. He immediately charged down to that prison cell. And Devaki was holding her little baby. She pleaded with Kamsa, please. It's the child that is meant to harm you is supposed to be a son. You have no fear of this girl. You've already killed 6 of my children. You're my brother. There's no danger from a girl. Just allow me to be a mother. Allow me to keep this one child. I beg you. Kamsa, so cold and cruel. So much thinking about his own self-interest above anything or anyone else. He forcibly took that little baby girl from Devaki. Now just see the difference between Vasudev, Devaki, and Kamsa. They're willing to endure any kind of crisis or difficulty for the sake of Krishna. for the sake of all the conditioned souls of this world. But Kamsa, he's willing to commit the worst atrocities because of himself. Kamsa so much personifies this selfish mentality of making me the center of the world. Some sociologists, they call this generation the me generation, because people are so much concerned with their own selfish interests. Real culture is when people become selfless, a spirit of service. What's good for others is what's good for me. People who are willing to make sacrifices, endure difficulties for the welfare of others, they are real human beings of integrity. Love is selfless. Lust is selfish. It is this selfishness that's polluting the world. It's this selfishness that's the cause of all problems. It's what induces people to illicit sex, to intoxication, and to so many other calamities of bad karmas. It's the cause of greed, economic difficulties within the world. It's all due to this selfishness, this greed. Kamsa was that manifestation. He didn't care whether his sister suffered miserably if it served his interest. A saintly person is paradukaduki. Another's suffering is my suffering, and another's happiness is my happiness. Devaki was frantically pleading, weeping, "Let me just keep this daughter." Kamsa, angry as fire, forcibly grabbed that little baby from Devaki and with his powerful hand was about to dash the little infant girl against a rock. He lifted her up about with all his strength of 10,000 elephants to smash her. But he was dealing with Yogamaya. By her power, she slipped out of Kamsa's hand and went into the sky and manifested her form of Durga, riding on lion with so many weapons holding in her hands. And she told Kamsa, "Why are you so cruel to your own brother and sister? The child that is meant to kill you has already been born and is somewhere else." And then she disappeared. Now, Kamsa was quite sobered up by that situation. Sometimes when things really go out of your control, it makes you sober. So he fell at Devaki and Vasudeva's lotus feet and begged forgiveness. "I'm sorry." But he was such a rascal. First he says he's sorry. He's saying, "But please don't blame me. It was really your own karma. I was just the instrument." Sometimes abusive people think like this. But he was, in his own way, he was repentant. And Vasudeva and Devaki are so kind. From their heart of hearts, they forgave him. They felt sorry for him. What saintly people. And he was so grateful to be forgiven. And he let them go. But But then some of Kamsa's ministers and others, they came together and they influenced him. That actually, you heard what Narada Muni said. The child is somewhere else. It's already born. So we should kill all the children. So even if a person who is repentant and starting to become Krishna conscious, if due to bad association, everything is spoiled. In that bad association, all of Kamsa's envious propensities came to the surface again. And he put Devaki and Vasudeva back into prison. After he begged their forgiveness and they forgave him, put him back into prison. And then he sent his soldiers and various asuras to kill every child in his entire kingdom and beyond who was born at that time. Hare Krishna. He became more cruel than ever. Meanwhile, Yashoda Mai wakes up with Gopal in her arms. And one Brahmani, she runs and gives the news to Nanda Maharaj, who was just then milking the cows. And he came running to that place. And there had the first darshan of his beloved eternal son, Gopal. And in the next morning, Nandotsav. Wonderful celebration where they performed the auspicious Abhishekam for the pleasure and good fortune of their child. And from that time, devotees over the past 5,000 years to celebrate Janmashtami, we celebrate it in the same way as it was celebrated at Krishna's original appearance within this world through dancing and chanting and Abhishekam. Of course, in Gokul, there wasn't any swine flu preventing the Brijavasis to come to participate. Everyone came. They didn't care. And this way Krishna makes himself present within this world. It is only once in a day of Brahma that Krishna appears in his original transcendental form. Four billion 320 million years is a day of Brahma. The same as his night. So it's only after over 8 billion years that Krishna personally appears in his original transcendental form. So from the perspective of universal time, 5,000 years ago is very recent. When Krishna appeared in his original transcendental form, all of the Vishnu avatars enter into his body. The Leela avatars, the Yuga avatars, the Manu avatars, they all enter into Krishna's body. Guna avatars. Krishna Swayam Bhagavan. It's full. And that is why we have this confidence on the basis of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, that when we worship Krishna, we worship all the demigods, all the different avatars, all the different expansions of the Absolute Truth. They are all accepting our worship in Krishna, because Krishna is the sum total. But Krishna especially comes in his original transcendental form to display his pastimes in Vrindavan. There is, for every yuga, there is a yuga avatar. All of these different avatars merged into Krishna's body. And it was in Vrindavan that Krishna revealed to the world his own personal abode in the spiritual sky. Vrindavan in this world is non-different than the Vrindavan in the spiritual world. And along with Krishna comes Sri Radharani and Balaram and Nanda, Yashoda, Sridhama, Sudama, Subal, the Surabhi cows, the eight Sakis, the Manjaris. These are all the eternal associates of Krishna in the spiritual world. They all come with him. Once in a day of Brahma, once in over 8 billion years, to demonstrate Vrindavan pastimes. And Krishna only displayed his Vrindavan pastimes for about 10.5 years. How precious. But when he displays his Vrindavan pastimes, he empowers Shukadev Goswami to speak them in Srimad Bhagavatam. He empowers Vyasadev to compile them. He empowers the great acharyas to elaborate on them due to the transcendental vision that he gives them. And in this way, he makes his Vrindavan pastimes manifest through sound vibration forever, just to attract our hearts to the highest, sweetest, most intimate, loving reciprocation with the Lord. And when the demons come, Krishna's Vishnu aspect kills the demons in Vrindavan. But the original Krishna, he's simply enjoying, playing with the gopas and the gopis forever. Because in Goloka Vrindavan there are no demons. It is that Lord of Goloka who descends. And when the demons come, the Vishnu aspects who are within the Lord of Goloka at that time actually performs the functions of the killing of the demons. But Krishna's Rasa Bihari, the supreme enjoyer, nothing else but enjoying the intimate love of his devotees. And he reveals those pastimes within this world out of his supreme love for every living being. We understand that the ultimate form of mercy is that Krishna reveals Vrindavan and his pastimes of Vrindavan into this world to invite us back home, back to Godhead. And by hearing these divine pastimes, following in the footsteps of Parikshit Maharaj, gradually we can enter into Krishna's eternal pastimes of Vrindavan. This is the gift that Srila Prabhupada has given us. When Srila Prabhupada was sitting in Radha Damodar temple, in Vrindavan, writing Srimad Bhagavatam, translating the original text and the essence of the commentaries of all the acharyas into English, and when he took those boxes of books with him on the Jaladuta, this was his spirit. That Krishna manifested his Vrindavan Leela to attract the whole world for all time to come to his abode. And Srila Prabhupada had that faith. He wanted to make it available for everyone. Before Prabhupada, it was only available in the Sanskrit language and maybe to a small extent in Hindi and in some Indian languages. But Prabhupada wanted the whole world to go to Vrindavan. Prabhupada was living in Vrindavan. He's an eternal resident. Prabhupada once said that he was in Goloka and Krishna told him to go to the material world and preach. And Prabhupada, who wants to come to the material world? Krishna said, no, you just write some books. I will be happy. So Prabhupada descended into this material world just to write these books and travel around the world 12 times, spreading the culture of Vrindavan. The rarest of all benedictions. And we can understand why Prabhupada was so determined. Prabhupada was asked, challenge. We have our own religions in our country. Why have you come? Prabhupada said, I have not come to convert you. I have come to enlighten. I have come to teach you what you've forgotten, how to love God. That's the universal principle of all religions, to love God. But understand, in Prabhupada's heart of hearts, he was not just teaching people the essence of all religions, of how to love God. But he was opening the doors to Vrindavan Dham to people all over the world. Something that literally no one else has ever done in our modern history. No one else has ever done it. It was Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu's prophecy that it would be done. It was Bhaktivinoda Thakur's dream. It was Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati's order. And Srila Prabhupada fulfilled that order. He planted the seed of Vrindavan throughout the whole world in so many people's hearts. And we are so fortunate that we have the opportunity to assist him, to be a part of it. Whatever may happen in life, whatever difficulties, whatever tragedies, whatever shortcomings, compared to the blessing of being able to, in whatever way, participate in this most magnanimous historical mission of Prabhupada's. Everything else is not really very relevant. How fortunate are we? When Stoka Krishna was dying of cancer, right here in this temple, he was only about, 31 years old? 34 years old. He looked like 31, though. He was only 34 years old. He just got married a couple years before. Just had a baby. Little beautiful little girl. He was looking at her and seeing. And he's about to die. Can't walk, paralyzed, pain, emaciated. He was so happy, smiling. And he said, he was just astonished by his good fortune. Why? Most people would say, why am I dying when I just had a little baby? Why am I dying when I'm only 34 years old? Who's going to take care of these things in my absence? Saying, why am I so fortunate that in my life I got to read Prabhupada's books? Why am I so fortunate that in my life I got to chant the holy name with all these wonderful devotees? Why I'm so fortunate that I got to assist Prabhupada's mission? Can you imagine? Today is Janmashtami. Once in every 8 billion years, Krishna manifests his Vrindavan Leela within Brahma's creation, within this universe. And in that same time, once every 8 billion plus years, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda come in the same Kali Yuga after their Dwapar Yuga of Krishna's appearance. And they manifest Vrindavan Leela in Navadvip in the most magnanimous form. Because Krishna comes to spread the love of Vrindavan to the world. He manifests it. Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda show the way to spread it. Krishna didn't spread it. He manifested it. It's Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, Krishna and Balaram, who through the Nam Sankirtan movement showed the way to spread it all over the world, to preach it. And Srila Prabhupada, he came to do it, to fulfill it. First time in this entire day of Brahma that someone traveled all over the world to successfully spread Vrindavan's culture, Vrindavan's rasa. To fulfill the purpose of Janmashtami. Krishna appeared on this day especially to attract the conditioned souls' hearts back to his loving service. As far as killing Kamsa and all those guys. Krishna didn't have to come in his original form to do that. Any Vishnu form, any expansion could kill all the demons. And they come all the time. Krishna's special mission was to reveal Vrindavan. The love of the gopas and the gopis, and his love for the gopas and the gopis. so rare, so special. That's Janmashtami. To attract the hearts of the world back to that. To the love of Braja. And Srila Prabhupada, with the mercy of Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya and the order of Bhakti Vinod and Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, traveled the world. He had the Srimad Bhagavatam translated in every major language on earth. He had the Hare Krishna mantra, Golokera Premadana Harinam Sankirtana. This Maha mantra is descending from Goloka Vrindavan. Chanting in every continent on earth. How rare, how precious, how special. And we get the chance to assist in this mission. If we simply give our heart to doing this, to assisting Prabhupada in this mission, we are certain to go back to Goloka Vrindavan. Stoka Krishna Prabhu had that appreciation. Doesn't matter that I'm suffering of cancer. Doesn't matter I'm going to die in a day or two. I'm just so fortunate. I got to help. I got to be a part of it. Death is going to happen anyway, but how many people get to be a part of it? He was so grateful. So blissful. What do we have to complain about? Why not see the infinite blessing and benediction that we have received and not be so concerned with the inevitable problems of material existence that are going to be upon everybody in various degrees? This is an immortal, eternal blessing. And if we just put our heart into it, it is our perfection, guaranteed. And Srila Prabhupada, by Krishna's arrangement, he takes birth in this world the day after Janmashtami. It's quite symbolic that the day after Janmashtami, the day when Nanda and Yashoda are celebrating Krishna's appearance in this world. Actually, at Janmashtami, midnight is when Krishna appeared, but there was not much of a celebration. It was just, you know, taking him across the Yamuna and the winds and the rains and all that. The real celebration came the next morning. When Nanda and Yashoda had their child. The child of Vrindavan, born in Vrindavan. Krishna Vrindavan. It's not the celebration of the child, just the child who was born in Mathura. It's Vrindavan. Nanda and Yashoda are united with Krishna to manifest the first of the Vrindavan Leelas in this sense, is this Abhishekam and the birth ceremony of Krishna. Prabhupada's born on that day. Why? Because he came from Goloka to spread this Vrindavan culture to the whole world. So let us, on this day of Janmashtami, express from our heart of hearts our gratitude and sincerely try to be grateful for the unlimited, infinite good fortune that we have. If I only live one more minute, no one could be happier than me. This is the way we should be praying. Let me have this mentality. If I only live for another second, no one, Krishna, give me the realization where no one could be happier than me. Because I got to chant the holy names with Lord, with Prabhupada's devotees and assist in this mission of spreading Vrindavan to the world. Actually helping to fulfill Krishna's reason for coming to this world on Janmashtami. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Shri Radha Gopinath ki jai. Go Premanandi. Any announcement you have? Should we sing some kirtan? And then perhaps some of you could give more classes? I'm coming right back. No.